guess what? They have to be. It's called mm-hmm. what Ian called them to be color brave.
Right? Yeah, I like that.
Color brave, not color blind, color brave.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to this webinar. My name is Jim Tam, and I'm with Novi, and I'm very thankful and really joyous that I'm going to be co-hosting this very important topic called how to talk about race at work in the workplace, along with my friend and longtime colleague, Kaplan Mowbray.
I think that companies have done something, and what's different, I think, this time versus, maybe previous events or previous periods of this nature, mm-hmm. companies have actually gotten behind a movement, gotten behind social justice. You see a lot of companies, with the, hashtag Black Lives Matter, which probably would have not had happened maybe 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But companies have also figured out that this is bigger than just what's happening in the streets. It's connected to the workforce. It's connected to how people are showing up. And we were already in the midst of a pandemic. We were already mm-hmm. in the midst of disruption. So this is disruption on top of disruption. So I think, I see that most companies now are understanding that this is a human, a human element issue, not just an issue for Blacks or African Americans, et cetera. And that's really what's driven a lot of the results that are happening in companies. Just a quick thing, I want to give a shout out. I see Graham Kavanaugh on. I see Stacey Neville on. I see Joanne Charles and some other folks on. Just wanted to give them a shout out. So, this is a big deal, and that this is so I think that's the reason why it's important to continue to have conversations on it and continue to have conversations that engage people and the workforce. But this is real, and it's good to see companies putting their money and their time and their messaging behind it.
Okay, I think you're right, but this is like the elephant in the corner that nobody addresses, right? Kaplan, it's like, why do you think it is so hard for people to talk about race in the workplace? Why is it even a topic?
Yeah, and feel free to provide your comments in the chat. Thank you, Gary, for that. I think you're right. 5 years ago, Freddie Gray, and there have been names that have triggered movements that have mm-hmm. not triggered the ability to talk about it. But we're in a different age. We're just in a different world. So we are talking about it. But two, 3 years ago, we wouldn't have been. Companies wouldn't have had the risk, the courage to stand behind it. The reason why it's difficult is because when you talk about race, you're not just talking about, you're talking about history. You're talking about emotion. You're bringing emotion into the workplace. Typically when you think about work, it's like, hey, do your job. Do right. your job, whether you like it or not, whether it sucks, just do your job. And you want to cry about it at home, So we're trained and taught to leave emotion outside of the workplace.
But when
you talk about race, it brings up immediate emotion. It brings up pain for some people. It brings up guilt for some people. It brings mm-hmm. up the acknowledgement of unfairness for some people. It brings up the struggle for some people. It brings up good history, bad history, past history. Everyone can connect to the topic based on a perspective. Maybe they saw something that was unjust, but it didn't happen to them, so they moved on. Maybe they were the victim or the incident of something that was unjust, and it stayed with them for their entire life or their career. But everyone has an opinion because it grips us in a way, but it's emotional. So we've brought emotion back into the workplace when we talk about race, and that's why it's a difficult subject. The other reason, Jim, is, let's face it, we'd rather talk about, even politics. In some cases, there's certain topics we don't want to talk about, but mm-hmm. we'd rather sometimes talk about politics or other topics, sports. Thank you, Gary. We'd rather talk about, the news, the weather, than talk. This is one of the least topics that people want to talk about. Why? Why? Because it brings up and it holds us to be more accountable to our experiences. And some of our experiences have been good, but some of our experiences have not been so good. There's been fairness, but there's also been not, inequity. So it's a difficult topic, but it's an important one.
No, it's for sure. And I think that you can't avoid it now too, right? Well, the only thing you can avoid is not being in the office, but still you're working with people every day that you may not see eye to eye with, right? But how do you think companies are preparing people to even talk about it? And are they having forums, and what are you seeing?
Yeah. So what I see is companies, one, had to get behind it. They understand that if you have a disrupted workforce, which we do already in the pandemic, so company, you know, just think about what's happening to our employees today. Just let's just take that. You know, thank you, Betty. Hey, Betty, we see you, Betty.
Thanks, Jack. Betty.
Here's what's happening today. People are in a health crisis. We're in a human health crisis. People know people who have been affected by COVID, or they are trying to keep themselves safe, keep their kids safe. School's back to, you know, about to go back to school. There's all this worry and disruption and uncertainty. We've lived in a world of uncertainty, and now we had the, you add in sort of disruption around racial and social unrest and what's happening in our streets, but what's also, it exposes the unfairness that may be happening in our companies. You know, people are uncertain about, you know, the political arena. People are uncertain about their jobs. People are losing their jobs left and right. Mm-hmm. They're trying to hold on to the jobs left and right. And now we all have to transact through this medium that some people are comfortable with, some people are not. You know, some people every day they are thumbnail number 8 of 56. They show up thumbnail number 8. And that's who I am. But guess what? I still need to get promoted. And I'm still trying to work hard. I still want to get promoted so I can provide for my job, my career, my family, whatever. But I'm thumbnail number 8. So the point is, we've been disrupted, you know, and that's why it's companies realize that people's productivity matters to growth. And if you have a segment of your workforce that is disrupted emotionally, they're going to be less productive. And that's going to affect also our profits, our growth, our culture, our team, our brand, and the ability to hold on to people that we want to hold on to, you know, or keep our people engaged to be really, really great at work. So it's complex.
Yeah. What about training? I mean, do you think companies are training their people how to talk to each other, or what are you seeing?
So it used to be, so the reason why this topic is so important, and I guess that, you know, I think for all those that are on, you know, companies were training employees on inclusion, on unconscious bias, which is about the awareness of your biases. But there was little training on how to actually talk about race, how to have a conversation. And the reality is sometimes you can get this conversation go south very quickly. You can get this conversation wrong very quickly. And it's hard to regain it back, especially when someone is already coming in with a certain level of, you know, of pain or angst. So companies are starting to wake up to, we need to train our people on how to have the conversation. We need to train our leaders on how to be more empathetic. Right. A lot of leaders, you know, would, after the George Floyd and Breonna and all these incidents, they would go, and the message was, go out to all your Black and African-American employees and just check in on them. That was the message, and that was the training, you know. And for some people, it's like, hey, you haven't talked to me in 3 years about a promotion. Now are you looking at me now? You know, you have, or for some companies, their leaders didn't know what to say, so they didn't talk to them at all because they didn't want to say something. They didn't want to offend. They didn't want to assume. So they were paralyzed, and they said nothing. And that created greater levels of pain. So the key with this conversation is, it is important to teach people how to have a conversation about race, because the how you have it is just as important as the what you say.
So how do you get a conversation started?
I mean, I think you have to first, you know, you have to state your intent. You have to really understand, why do you even want to have a conversation in the first place? You know, besides your boss telling you, check in on your people, you know, why do you want to have the conversation? Often, you know, with leaders and managers understand that this is a leadership exercise just as much as it is a human connection exercise. How to have a difficult conversation. You have to understand your why. You know, what's the why? What's bringing you to the want to have the conversation? Mm-hmm. For many, it's, you know, if you have someone on your team who is dealing with something, that employee is going to be less productive. And your job as a leader is to maintain, grow, and increase productivity of your team and your culture. Set a culture of high performance, excellence. So if you can't do that because you can't have a conversation, then you as a leader are not being as good a leader as you can be. So the how starts with the why you want to have it in the first place. And for example, when people say, how are you doing? That was a question a lot of, you know, people got in their companies. How are you feeling? Everything's going on. Things are happening in Georgia. How are you feeling? And so I advocate, I talk to leaders, say, don't just say, how are you feeling? Say, if I were in your shoes, what would I be feeling today? That's empathy, right? That's empathy. That's very different than how you're feeling. You know, so, and then the other question is, if you were me as your manager, what would you want me to do to support you, right? That's a very different question than how are you feeling? So teaching leaders how to be empathetic during this time is a leadership exercise as it is a human, you know, interaction exercise. So the first point is just ask, you know, understand why. Mm-hmm. But the second, it's important to understand, you know, what do you want to gain from the conversation? What do you want to gain? For all of us that are on this Zoom right now, understand that in the virtual world, as you're working and trying to get ahead in your career, two most important things are your communication frequency, what I call CF, and your relationship quality, RQ. The greater your communication frequency in the virtual world and the greater your relationship quality, that's how you establish a virtual brand to keep advancing your career. A lot of people are disappearing. They're like, they are thumbnail number 8 of 56 every day, and they're disappearing. And what's happening is they're disappearing, and they're not only not having conversations, we're becoming less connected with our people. So it is important to connect along things that are controversial, even talking about race. Yeah. So the how you have it, Jim, is you got to aim it. You got to have what do you want to achieve? As a result of the conversation, I will. In the conversation, I will be. And mutually together, we will achieve. It's called AIM, A-I-M. And I share more of this in my NOBE course. But you have to have an aim for the conversation. What is the mutual goal and benefit that you will achieve by having a conversation about race?
Yeah, I think your point about intentions is very, very important, right? When people know that you're asking questions or you're initiating the conversation and it comes from a good place, I think that's when you can have direct dialogue and frank, candid dialogue, right? And you're right, you're never going to understand what it's like to be in the other person's shoes, and don't even try. But just say, hey, I know it's hard, and let's talk about it.
I welcome questions in the chat, even just about how to have the conversation. So if you want to chat some questions, but the reality is, if that same employee, I use this example often with leaders, if you had an employee on your team who had cancer, there would be something that would grip you to want to check in on that employee, see what you can do to support that employee, see what's going on around that employee that you can do. But there would be a natural level of empathy and care that you would SOS to that employee, and you would rally around whatever you can do given that time to make sure that that employee has everything they need to be resourceful as well as productive. It's no different. Like when the trauma happened in the streets and things like that, some people were coming into work with a level of pain that in their mind was a cancer that had been building for years. And it's the same thing. Empathy is a leadership skill. And that's why it's important to have the conversation. But it's also important to train people on how to have it so that they can get the mutual best result. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, as Kaplan said, if you guys have any questions that are on top of mind or maybe something that's specific to your organization that you just want some, share your thoughts or ask Kaplan what his thoughts are, please put it in the chat or put it in the Q&A. So you mentioned something about, corporate cultures and, how is this movement, impacting corporate culture overall?
So here's what I equate it to. Externally, what's happening in the world, you see the movement, you see people in the streets. And what I love and what was most encouraging is the people in the streets. It wasn't black people in the streets or Asian people in the street or white.
Everybody.
It was a human, and human justice issue and energy, not just a one particular, race. So I thought that was really, encouraging. But what's happening in companies, so what's happening outside is people are looking for instances of unfairness, or bias, including, to the extreme, turning over statues to other things, Aunt Jemima right now, announced that they're going to change the packaging on their syrup. This is a multi, year, 100-year brand, they're going to change the packaging on syrup because the packaging is rooted in, connotations that bring us back to, more bias and more racial sensitivity. You've got, companies that are changing the way that they hire. You've got retailers who used to have locked packaging for ethnic hair care and other products because they thought that those products would probably get stolen, which is a bias. And now they're removing the locks on the ethnic products because they didn't have locks on the non-ethnic products that achieve the same. So there are things that are happening. So what companies are doing now is they're looking for bias. They're looking for unfairness. They're looking for things that have not gone right that they probably didn't pay as much attention to, like feedback, performance review feedback. I tell leaders today, look at the feedback that you've been given to your professionals, to African-American or marginalized professionals, whatever. And look at, is there any bias in the feedback that has hindered someone from performing or getting advanced? So companies are doing a better job now looking for opportunities. you talked to Alex Ohanian for Reddit, who said, you know, I'm on this board. We have, you know, lack of diversity on the board, especially at, you know, at the leadership levels. I'm going to step down. I'm going to give my board seat, or I'm going to make that seat open to an African-American, you know, professional or a woman, you know. So the point is, companies are being very intentional, very intentional. And guess what? They have to be. It's called what you call them to be color brave.
Yeah, I like that.
Color brave, not color blind, color brave. And what that means is we have to make these decisions without the why, you know, what are we, the guilt of why are we doing that? Mm-hmm. You know, because the patterns of unfairness have gone on. So you have to make intentional change to drive intentional results. And you know, so Gary had a question, how often is the right check-in amount? Are we working as we work remotely? How do we determine that? Couple things. When you're working remotely, Gary, and for those that are working remotely, two things you have to do. You have to over-communicate and you have to over-relationship. Yeah. You have to over-communicate and you have to over-relationship. You'll develop a cadence, but it's got to be genuine. So that's the first thing. The genuine is what's important. But you've got to over-communicate. You've got to over-relationship. What that means is if you were checking in with someone once on a project or checking with them how they're feeling, you've got to now check in. You've got to, two things. You got to check in on them, how they're doing. You got to check up on how they doing, what do they need. You got to check for, how can I be a resource? Check in, check up, and check for, right? Mm-hmm. Three things, you know, three types of checkup. And you think about, am I checking in on them from a personal, professional, professor? Am I checking up on what they're doing in their work? You know, are they advancing? Do they need? And I'm checking for how I can be a better leader, a better resource. Check in, check up, and check for. That's a great cadence but you know, you'll find the right amount, whatever is genuine. And that's what matters. But in this virtual world, you have to over-communicate, you have to over-relate to it.
No, I agree with that. And I think, you know, the whole cadence thing sometimes, you know, can also be an excuse. It's like, oh, I meet with him every Monday, but that's not checking in. That's just doing your job, right? It's like, just, you know, an impromptu call. It's like, hey, just want to see how you're doing. And that can go a very long way.
Yeah. And the way that, you know, for leaders and the way of a lot of, you know, folks in companies that, on this, you know, the way that you can sort of change your cadence is change the questions that you're asking, right? Change the questions that you're asking, you know?
I think Jeff's got a great question over here, Kaplan.
Yeah.
Can you give an example of a good way to open a conversation about race?
Yeah. So, you know, I talk about, actually I have an example. So, you know, so the how you start is so important, right? That's you know, and when you talk about race, there's this, what I call this thing, the TQMA, which is topics, questions, misconceptions, and answers. The first place is to acknowledge what you don't know, right? So, you know, hey, Jim, I'd like to get your advice. I want to learn more about, you know, your experience, you know, as an African-American employee. Specifically, I'm trying to learn more about ways that I can be a better leader. Can you give me some, would you be willing to share with me some of the experiences that you had that can help me learn more about things I may not know, so that I can be more aware of things that I can do to help you in your journey, but to be more supportive as a leader? So what I did in that conversation, thank you for the question, Jeff, is I said, Jim, can you help me? Can you give me some advice? And when you put someone in a position to give them advice to you, especially about conversation on race, you are being vulnerable. And you're creating a way to create value from being vulnerable. You're saying something I don't know, or I may not know, or I may be missing. I trust you. So you're valuing the other person's perspective and authentic self. I trust you. So I'm asking you for advice. And in the process of our conversation, I'm going to learn something more that's going to make me better. Right? So does that make sense? So it's the coming with vulnerability about something that you want to know that you believe you may or may not be getting right. Trust the other person because you're asking them for advice, you know, ask them to be willing to share, and then mutually saying, this is going to help me be better. That's a great lexicon for that. And you know, for example, here's another example. Someone said to me, you know, hey, you know, I had a great meeting. You know, one of my employees, you know, my African-American employees, you know, he had a great meeting. I went up to him and I said, you know, you did a great job. You're so articulate. And he said, you know, I couldn't understand. I got this look. I was talking to one of these leaders, coaching one of my leaders. I said, you know, I got this look, and he was kind of not, he didn't take the compliment so well, you know, he kind of, you know, but I was just trying to say he was so articulate. You know, what did I do? You know, was there something that I said? And I said, well, you know, you have to take a step back. When you think about, you know, being, when you say that to someone, you may be saying, what you think you're saying, your intent is good, but your language was bad, right? Your intent was, hey, you did a great job. But what you said was, you're so articulate, which may tell someone, I didn't expect you to be so articulate. I may have under-expected you for any reason, maybe because of your race, whatever. I didn't expect you. So automatically, you're telling me that you under-expected me. What other things are you under-expecting in my performance based on who I am, right? So I said that the way that you come back from that is you say, instead of saying you're so articulate, you say, you know, you have really great presentation skills. There's a lot that we could learn as a team from you. Would you mind sharing some of the tips that you use to be an excellent presenter? It's the same thing, but you're saying it in a position of strength, not a position of deficiency. So great question. I know some questions are coming up here.
Yeah, the questions are coming in now. So Rena has a great one.
Some feel that they have lost trust in the organization. What are some ways to rebuild the lost trust or support rebuilding the trust? So the first thing is you got to acknowledge, you know, I have this thing. It's called acknowledge, discover, clarify, and empathize, right? You just got to acknowledge the best way to build trust, even in any relationship, is you got to acknowledge what you're good at, but also acknowledge where you could have been better.
Yeah. Admit wrongdoing if needed.
Admit wrongdoing. Admit the fact that, you know what, we've been at this diversity inclusion journey for, you know, 20 years, 30 years. And guess what? Our percentages of, you know, of how we've moved and advanced African-American, you know, Latino, Black, Asian women in our organization, is still, you know, abysmal, and we could be better, and we know it. So we know we want to do something about it. The best way to build trust is to first acknowledge, you know, sort of, you know, bad performance, or, you know, the need for better performance. So that's the other part is to say, here's what we want to do about it, right? So you got to acknowledge it, but then you've got to, here's what we do about it. And you got to empathize, you know, you got to empathize the fact that it is important for people to see mentors that look like them, because then they see hope and opportunity for others. So great question. Other
questions? You're right. And it's also, you know, like, do something about it and then stay to it. It's not a checkbox.
It's not a checkbox.
How your company is going to operate going forward.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Great question. Thanks a lot, Rena. I think Dwayne has a good one too. I think a challenge is like when you have a lot of people to manage, and there's one more thing that you got to do is, like, you know, on top of everything else, the current, like, any ideas on how to assist their perception?
Yeah. To assist. I think the question is to assist in their perception of, you know, obviously, you know, checking in on people is another thing. It's just another thing in the midst of so many things that we have to do. So another way to help in their perception is not just check in on them, but make it real. So here's an example. When I coach a lot of leaders about performance or help them to improve performance of their workforce, I say, look at the percentage of what I call career advancing opportunities, the assignments that get you promoted. And look at the percentage of your people who are on those assignments. And maybe the percentage, let's take African-American, your Black African-American professionals. What percentage of your Black African-American professionals are on the assignments, the jobs that give you the skill, the mentoring, the high visibility, the ability to fail fast and learn, the ability to promote fast and grow? What percentage of your workforce, your Black African-American, as an example, are on those type of assignments? And if the reality is there's a smaller percent on those type of assignments versus on, you know, more task-oriented, you know, sort of, you know, process-oriented assignments versus strategic-oriented career growth assignments, that's an opportunity. So another way to say, you know, instead of I got to check in all the time, is let me put people on challenging assignments. Let me connect them to a mentor, a skip level, two levels up mentor or leader that they should just get to know. So you can help. It's a lot of it is heavy lifting, but also some of it are just things that you can do by just saying, hey, I want to connect you to a mentor. I want to give someone a mentor that they probably wouldn't have gotten the opportunity to connect with. So there are other things that you can do in this environment to assist in that perception. Great, great, great question, Dwayne. Great, great thought.
We also got some questions coming in the Q&A. So this one's from Stacy Kaplan. I agree that empathy is a skill that leaders should have, but do you think it can be taught or learned?
So empathy can absolutely be taught. I mean, I think, you know, most people, you know, learn empathy, you know, when they have kids, you know, or if they have kids, or they have a dog, or they have, you know, something. But you also learn empathy when you experience something. It's all about walking through each other's shoes. You know, one of the things I've done, you know, I've created these conversation cards, and I've had people, you know, sort of say, you know, put themselves in other people's shoes. That's the biggest thing around empathy. But teaching leaders about empathy starts by teaching them to listen, you know, discuss, not debate, you know, but the, listen, to listen so that they can hear the experiences of others and then put themselves in the shoes of others. Empathy is a skill that can be taught. Absolutely. It's a skill, but it's under-trained, you know, under-learned, you know, sort of competency in corporate American leaders today. But it starts to understand that you've got to listen and listen for what you're not hearing. You got to look to understand the experiences of others, and you got to trust yourself to be vulnerable to say, here's something I may not know. Help me go now know it. So it's a great question, Stacey, but it can be. It's not just ingrained. I think you learn empathy because you have to be intentional about your actions.
Okay. And here's one from Anonymous. How does an unwoken white person know what racist and stereotypical versus just bias? You know.
So what's race? What? So give me the question again.
It's in the Q&A. How does an unwoken white person know what racist and stereotypical, or is it just biases?
You know, there's bias, there's, you know, stereotypes, and there's mm-hmm. just flat out, you know, racist, you know, and a lot of these are kind of, and it a sense around this notion of microaggressions, right? So a microaggression could be, and this is, again, there are a lot of people who unwoke, but well-intentioned, and sometimes they have good intentions, they use bad language, or have good intentions, use bad action, or they don't even know. So the unwoke sometimes is just about not even knowing. Now, here's an example. Let's take African-American women, black women. Hair is a big thing for black women, right? Stacey, if you're on, give me a thumbs up, or anyone who's on, give me a thumbs. Hair is a big thing, right? So for some companies, you know, it's hey, you know, someone wears their hair and they got curls on Monday, they got straight hair on Tuesday, they got braids on Wednesday, they've got, you know, sort of a part and plaits on Thursday, and they're back to braids, you know, and twists on Friday. And all of a sudden, that person, that black woman in a company, you know, all they talk about is the changing nature of her hair. So when, as opposed to the great credibility in her skill, right? And all of a sudden, that person becomes a joke, you know, like, hey, you know, braids, dreadlocks, whatever, that becomes their brand. And it becomes, hey, you know, what are you going to wear? What's your hair going to be tomorrow? And that becomes that person's brand, right? But another person, gentleman, may wear a blue blazer on Monday, a gray blazer on Tuesday, a brown blazer on Wednesday, a green blazer on Thursday, you know, and back to a bluish charcoal, you know, on Friday. No one says a thing about their self-expression. But and that person gets promoted, but the woman who's sharing their self-expression through her hair is the butt of a joke. That's a microaggression. No one thought about it, but it's like the same thing. Someone has a five-syllable name, Aracharya. You know, maybe from there, they're from Hyderabad, Aracharya. And that person is a really great employee. But every time someone pronounces their name, it's like, and all of a sudden their name becomes a joke. They're a really good employee, but their name becomes a joke. Aracharya. So now their name is up for a promotion, and someone sees a name, it's like Archie, and they just call him Archie, right? But that name, that person's name is, you know, gift of wisdom. That's what their name means, gift of wisdom. And all of a sudden, that person's name becomes a joke, as opposed to something they talk about their skill. But guess what? You're in a company where you can learn global derivatives, you know, derivatives training, and you know, and you know, sort of financial accounting, you know, and you can learn these complex, you know, processes and systems and artificial intelligence, machine learning, but you can't learn a five-syllable name, right? But that's a microaggression. So things like that happen. Stereotypes, you know, in terms of, you know, how stereotypes play out. A woman walks into a boardroom. She's the only woman in the room, right? It's a big high-level meeting. She carries a notebook, and all of a sudden everyone looks to the woman and says, hey, can you take the notes, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, these are little microaggressions that show up. But all of a sudden, it's like, you know, it's feeding into biases and things like that. So yes, there's what I call micro assaults, which is a real assault. There's invalidations where you invalidate someone based on where they came from. They can't speak English, you know, as well, but they speak three languages. You only speak one, right? Or mm-hmm. there's actual, you know, racist activity, which are actual racist behavior. So there is a spectrum. The key is, as an unwoke white person, is to understand, always state intent. A lot of times people have really good intent. They just use bad language. That's where the conversation on race comes in. It's just, help me understand. Is it black? Is it African-American? Doesn't matter. You know, is it, you know, when you have an event in your company and you say, hey, everybody, this is a great event, you can invite your spouse, but you leave off the word spouse and partner. And all of a sudden now you alienated the LGBT community, right? Mm-hmm. And all you did was say, hey, I want to make this event inclusive, but you didn't know you were being not inclusive to a segment of the, you know, of your workforce. That's an example. Yeah.
Yeah, no, sometimes I know that you know, you hear opinions from people, so I think we're just being way overly sensitive. It's like, no, we haven't been sensitive enough. I think we need to be very, we need to look at everything in a very inclusive lens. And you're right about the name, you're right about the gender. We all have stereotypes regardless of whether, you know, we acknowledge them or not, but we need to first recognize we have them before we can change them.
Right, and it goes both ways. You know, sometimes, you know, in companies, you know, I talk to leaders and, you know, in many companies, leaders, the percentage of leaders are white male. And what's happening in companies today, the white male and older. And but oftentimes, you know, someone will say, even as a white male, you know, the assumption of privilege and the assumption of, you know, how do you own your privilege and own the experiences that you may have? And someone's, you know, this happened to me, real story, you know, coaching a group of high level partners in a consulting firm, and a leader said to me, you know, I'm white. And but guess what? You know, maybe 12 years ago, I was homeless. And, you know, I was homeless. So people think I've had this experience, this life journey, you know, to partner, and I've got all this privilege and everything, but I'm so humble because 12 years ago I was homeless. And it blew everyone's mind, you know, the assumption of, you know, so the whole point is this: we have to connect, we have to relate, and we have to understand each other. And the only way that we do that is through conversation. And that's why it's important to have these type of conversations.
Yeah, you're right. Let me ask you a question. What companies do you think are doing it right? And what are some of the do's and don'ts that you would encourage companies to think about?
You know, I'll, you know, I mean, I think a lot of companies are well-intentioned. What I see right now is companies are hiring office of diversity leaders across the board because they want to make sure that they have, you know, a focus on this that is beyond this period of time. So I applaud companies for that. You know, like the companies we talked about, the examples where companies, you know, I'll talk about sectors where companies are really looking at marketing, how they're marketing their products and services in an effective way. Companies are looking at the representation. You know, companies are looking at the supplier diversity, you know, how they spend, where they spend their money. You know, I've done a lot of work with, you know, companies like, you know, like State Street, you know, in Boston. One of the things that they've done is, you know, to talk to pretty much the, you know, the entire workforce about these issues, how to be an empathetic leader. So leaders to managers, how to talk and be empathetic during these times, how to talk about race. So they're actually having sessions for their workforce on how to talk about race, and then having micro sessions on having those conversations so that, you know, white leaders, you know, who may not, you know, have even a diverse team are still talking about race. And that's the thing that I think is important for companies. This is not an issue or conversation just for Black professionals or employees. It's an issue for our workforce. So the face of, if you're a leader, you are the face of the issue of the opportunity. And so this is not for some companies, it's, you know, this, let their Black employees or let the Black leader handle that with the Black employees. That's a wrong thing to do because this is a workforce issue. So companies that are doing well are making sure their leaders are the face of the opportunity, the face of the conversation. Their leaders are saying, we are going to have these conversations. Even if we're talking to our team is not diverse. A lot of companies still have teams that are just not diverse, but guess what? They're still having the conversation. This is not a Black conversation. This is a conversation about connecting, understanding, and relating to each other. So that's one. The other thing I think is important is what this concept I call, and Jeff, thanks so much. I want to get to your question. Turn the museum into a grocery store. Turn the museum into a grocery store. When this happened for many people, it's like, let's look in on our Black employees. Oh my gosh, this happened. You know, everything's happening in the streets. You know, oh my gosh. So you look at every Black employee that you got, you know, go find them, you know, go find your Black employees, go look, you know, go look, go find them. Go, where are they? Go check in on them. Go find them, check in. Where are they? You know, where are they? Look for them. And it became this thing is, you know, yeah, we have our head up, but, you know, don't look at me, you know, look at my career. You know, help me to advance, you know, find, so a museum, you go to watch things, right? And then you make the people victims of a circumstance. The grocery store, you go to find nutrients, you know, growth. So if you're a leader, you know, and you're in this context, it's about giving people opportunity, recognizing opportunity. You know, is there a development skill that I can provide or provide an opportunity to that helps you advance your career? That's real nutrients. But don't just watch me, you know, George Floyd happened, you're okay. I'm watching you. You know, I'm watching how you show up every single day. No, mm-hmm. Let's talk about, you know, what can I do to help you be more productive to help to advance your career, your skills.
Yeah, so, no, that's so great.
That's something, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a time where you just can't sit on the sidelines. You just can't observe from afar. You can't be passive. Yeah. You've got to get involved, you know, stick up for what's wrong, you know, say the things that's on your mind and get it out in the open.
Yeah, and be willing to acknowledge what you don't know. You know, I think that's the important thing that companies are having conversations, great companies, so even Verizon, you know, other companies, you know, having courageous conversations throughout, you know, and I think that's important, is make sure to continue the conversations, giving people a forum to talk. You know, Jeff, you said, you know, how often do you find that people said are assigned an intention that didn't exist? I think it relates to your use of the wrong word being used. Yeah, SARS. Yeah, people oftentimes assign an attention that often didn't exist. And, you know, guess what? Not every, you know, some people, you know, would check in on their, you know, Black employees, for example. And some would say, hey, listen, you know, I am good, but there are things I want, you know, don't check in on me for the George Floyd thing, you know, when you haven't checked on me for my career advancement. I've been trying to, you know, get a promotion, a raise for years, you know, So you think people want one thing, but you know that the understanding the intent and understanding unintended consequences are important. So I think that's, you know, Jeff, your point is well taken, that sometimes you're assigned an intention that didn't even exist. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And then just respect for time, we have 6 more minutes. I do want to ask one last question to Gavin. It's like, what's the next thing? What's the next conversation you think, in your opinion, that needs to have?
So two things. One, thank everyone who came on, and this is an ongoing conversation, so we're going to have more of these. But, you know, create a safe zone, a brave zone, and a respect zone before having a conversation. A safe zone, a brave zone, and a respect zone. And that allows you to then be, you know, be fruitful in the conversations that you have. I think what's next is, you know, allyship and microaggressions, talking about how can I be a better ally given things that are going on. How can I, you know, be intentional about finding ways to be more supportive and about things that have been unfair, you know, metrics that need to be reversed and changed, behaviors and processes that need to be improved. We all are part of that solution. The second is microaggressions, you know, just the simple behaviors that show up every single day. If we learn new ways to approach behaviors that we often may not assume we're doing or having a bad consequence of, we can then show up better every single day. So instead of someone saying, you know, I don't see color, that's a big thing, I don't see color. And someone says, well, no, see color, you're not seeing me. So you're not seeing what I bring. And all, because then again, Jeff, the intention was well intended. I don't see color. I live my life to be colorblind, but that means that when it comes time for an opportunity, you don't see me. You don't see me as a female, you know, you don't see me as a Black woman, you don't see me as a whatever. I want you to see me, because if you see me, then you can know me, you can trust me. And then you can actually help support me. So those are types of things. The learning more about the microaggressions, I think, is next.
Well, and looking at the Q&A, and I think it's related to this, I want to address it before we leave, is, you know, Isabella has a question. How do we, as a minority, manage microaggression from folks who resent the efforts to give positions to more minorities? They see their lack of advancement as a result of efforts to further placement of minorities.
Yeah, I mean, we have to be intentional. I mean, when you call out the numbers, when you look, right, like today, there's only 4 Black CEOs in all companies, all Fortune companies. You know, there's only, you know, when you call out the numbers, it's not just about the need to place someone there. It's about what it says about opportunity, you know, for companies. And we have to be intentional. And the intentional is empathy, you know. You put yourself in the context. You know, when were you the first or the only? How did that feel, right? And just think about the pressure that sometimes that comes with. But when you were the first or the only, when people can be more empathetic about opportunity, and people who have historically not gotten an opportunity, even though they've had skills and talent and a network, things like that, there's a level of unfairness that people can see. So people can see the opportunity to change and improve a result for humanity, for their company, for their leaders, for their pipeline, and the different perspective that it brings. it adds greatness. But you've got to be willing and have empathy to see it, you know, and to want to help be a part of the solution, just like Alex Ohanian did with Reddit. He said, I'm going to step down because I can do that. And that's using privilege to create opportunity, using power to create opportunity. And so we have to be intentional in this day and age. Yeah, Jeff, thank you so much, Jeff. And this conversation can go on. There's so much more layers to this conversation. And we'll continue it. You know, I'd love to continue this conversation. But the biggest thing people can do now is to be intentional about wanting to change something, improve something, and be part of that solution with vulnerability. And I think a safe zone, a brave zone, and a respect zone will help you do that. In this virtual age, over communicate, over relationship, and be intentional. You know, be intentional. Even when you're checking on someone that you hadn't checked in on before, be intentional. And the genuine nature of what we do will help us to improve.
Yeah. I still reflect back to Gandhi, right? Be the change you want to create. And I say change starts with I, doesn't start with a C.
That's right.
So, thank you.